At the centre of the cathedral stood a model of heaven called the Golden House. Its roof unfolded like a flower to reveal a human-sized hollow in which the body of poor Prince Rufus lay, shrouded in gold and white. His feet rested upon the house's blessed threshold. His head lay cradled by a nest of gilded stars. At least it should have been. Prince Rufus's killer had decapitated him. The guard had scoured forest and marshland, looking in vain for the prince's head. He was to be buried without it. I stood upon the steps of the cathedral choir, facing the funeral. From the high balcony pulpit to my left, the bishop prayed over the Golden House, the royal family, and the noble mourners crowding the heart of the church. Beyond a wooden railing, common mourners filled the cavernous nave. As soon as the bishop finished his prayer, I was to play the invocation to St. Eustace, who escorted spirits up the heavenly stair. I swayed dizzily, terrified, as if I had been asked to play flute upon a windy cliff. In fact, I had not been asked to play at all. I was not on the programme. I had promised Papa, when I left, that I wouldn't perform in public. I had heard the invocation once or twice, but never before played it. This wasn't even my flute. My chosen soloist, however, had sat upon his instrument and bent its reed. My backup soloist had drunk too many libations for Prince Rufus's soul and was out in the cloister garden, sick with regret. There was no second backup. The funeral would be ruined without the invocation. I was responsible for the music, so it was up to me. The bishop's prayer wound down. He described the glorious heavenly home, dwelling of all saints, where all of us would rest someday in eternal bliss. He didn't list exceptions. He didn't have to. My eyes flicked involuntarily toward the Dragon Ambassador and the goodwill contingent from his embassy, seated behind the nobility but ahead of the common rabble. They were in their sarantrai, their human forms, but were immediately distinguishable, even at this distance, by the silver bells at their shoulders, the empty seats around them, and their disinclination to bow their heads during a prayer. Dragons have no souls, no unexpected piety from them. "Be it ever so," intoned the bishop. That was my signal to play, but at that exact moment I noticed my father in the crowded nave beyond the barrier. His face was pale and drawn. I could hear in my head the words he'd said the day I left for court, a mere 2 weeks ago. "Under no circumstances are you to draw attention to yourself. If you won't think of your own safety, at least remember all I have to lose." The bishop cleared his throat, but my insides were ice and I could barely breathe. I cast about desperately for some better focus. My eyes lit upon the royal family, three generations seated together before the Golden House, a tableau of grief. Queen Lavanda had left her grey locks loose around her shoulders. Her watery blue eyes were red with weeping for her son. Princess Dionne sat tall and glared fiercely, as if plotting revenge upon her younger brother's killers, or upon Rufus himself for failing to reach his 40th birthday. Princess Glacelda, Dionne's daughter, laid her golden head upon her grandmother's shoulder to comfort her. Prince Lucian Kiggs, Glacelda's cousin and fiancé, sat a little apart from the family and stared without seeing. He was not Prince Rufus's son, but he looked as shocked and stricken as if he'd lost his own father. They needed heaven's peace. I knew little of saints, but I knew about sorrow and about music as sorrow's surest balm. That was comfort I could give. I raised the flute to my lips and my eyes toward the vaulted ceiling and began to play.